Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. The world changed
literally today. Taking America back 150 years. This is a sad day for the country, in my view.
At just after 10 o'clock this morning, the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, declaring there is no constitutional right to an abortion. The nation had been waiting since May when a draft opinion leaked suggesting that the court would do that. Nevertheless, reaction has been swift. And strong.
I am spitting mad over this. We have six extremist justices on the United States Supreme Court who have decided that their moral and religious views should be imposed on the rest of America. This is not what America wants.
This afternoon on Radio Boston, local reactions.
We got to figure out how we stop this incredible assault on women. It's nonstop.
Sound there from President Biden, a pro-life celebration in Washington, D.C., Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren, and Massachusetts State Senator Cindy Friedman. We will spend the hour processing all of this with you. Legal analysis and implications for our state where abortion remains legal. And we're opening the phones. We are a community. Call us with your reflections. The number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. To begin the hour, for just a brief period of time, we have Representative Catherine Clark joining us. She is of the 5th Massachusetts District and the Assistant Speaker of the House. Representative, thank you for joining us.
Oh, it's good to be with you.
So what is your reaction to today's decision as a woman and as a congressional leader?
It is a horrifying day for both roles. And overturning Roe brings us to a reality of government-mandated pregnancy. We are now living in a dystopian nightmare. Forced pregnancy is not only morally abhorrent, but it is going to set women back, not just for decades, but back to the 1850s.
So what does Congress do now, Congresswoman Clark?
It goes beyond Congress. It is about all of us, because this court has defied the will of the American people. The overwhelming majority of us believe that Roe should have stayed the law of the land, and that women and their families, in accordance with their doctors and medical needs and their faith, are the ones who we should trust to make these critical, important, and intimate decisions. So all of us have the obligation now, not just to despair, but to organize, to peacefully march, and to vote, vote, vote come this November.
Congresswoman, there are people across the country also celebrating today. And we've talked in the past about the fact that there are people in your district who will celebrate today, who feel that the court has done the right thing. What is your dialogue and message to that part of our American community?
You know, of course, there are people that this decision feels right to, mainly because of their religious beliefs. And we can respect that in this country and also understand that we have a separation of church and state. It is part of our underlying protections for freedom and liberty and the right to assemble. And all of this is being thrown out. So while somebody may celebrate this decision because it's in line with their faith, the peril in other aspects of their life is very real. Let's be clear. This has been part of a Republican agenda to take us backwards. It is about control and determination of our own futures. They are writing down their vision for America. It is one where birth control is banned, abortion is banned and criminalized. And we already know that they don't see when these children are born that there should be maternity care in health plans, that children should have the right to go to school and not be shot in their classroom, that parents should have parental leave when their children are sick so they can take care of them, that people, especially women and women of color, should be paid a living wage so they can support their families.
So, Congresswoman, earlier in this conversation, you called it government-enforced pregnancy. Here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, abortion will continue to be legal. The Roe Act is the law of the Massachusetts land. What is the role of you as an elected representative of this Commonwealth, but in Congress, to leave room for the states to do what they want to do now, recognizing that in Massachusetts, that means keeping abortion legal, but it also means in any number of other states doing the opposite?
I will say this. Right now in Massachusetts, Roe is the law of the land. For now. I'll say it again. The GOP is being very clear, and a majority of the Supreme Court who have been radicalized are also being clear. This is the beginning, not the end, of rolling back rights. And that should send a chill down the spine of every single American.
You've called for voting. You've made reference to what the GOP agenda is going to be. Midterm elections are in November. Next week is the beginning of July. What will the congressional legislative agenda be between now and November, recognizing the moment we're in? What's your leadership focus?
My leadership focus is to organize, to continue to travel this country and talk to folks, whether they live in red, purple, or blue districts, about what is at stake in November. This is far beyond Democrats or Republicans and partisan bickering. This is about the fundamentals of democracy. This is about freedom for women. What we're seeing is we are seeing a plan to roll back and limit rights. Just this week, we've seen that guns have more rights in this country than women do. That is appalling. And it is something that people across partisan divides and ideologies understand. If their 14-year-old daughter comes home pregnant because she was raped, a family wants to be able to make decisions about what to do next, not entrust their politician who represents them in a statehouse will make that most important and private decision for them. And once we start to roll back abortion care and reproductive rights, we've already seen Justice Thomas putting in his concurring opinion that birth control, equal marriage, are all on the same chopping block. This is a fundamental strike at what we call liberty and freedom in this country. And we have to organize and vote like our lives depend on it, because they do.
Massachusetts Congresswoman and Assistant Speaker of the House, Catherine Clark, I know you have to go do some voting. I appreciate you making some time for us this afternoon. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to go to the phones, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK, to reflect with us here on Radio Boston today how the decision today is affecting you. Beth is on the line in Cambridge. Beth, go ahead.
Yes, hi. Thanks so much for taking my call. I have a daughter who is heading to college this fall out of state.
So, Beth, I'm going to stop you. We've got a bad line for you all of a sudden. I do want to hear what you have to say. We'll see if we can get you back. In the meantime, I'm going to go to Debbie in Lowell. Debbie, go ahead.
Hi. I'm just really concerned. I mean, I'm done having kids. I'm just really concerned with everybody else who isn't. And how is it that somebody else can tell them how their family should be, like you guys brought up about rape and incest and all that stuff? And I don't understand how is it that the government can take over a woman's body but yet men don't have to ask permission for Viagra or vasectomies, but women still have to ask. I know at least in Massachusetts it used to be to get their tubes tied. I know they told me when I had surgery after having my second child by emergency C-section that I had to get my husband's prior approval, which I was totally thrown by. I mean,
so this feels like an echo of that for you, Debbie?
It does. It seems like we're going backwards. I mean, what's the next thing? They're going to tell us we need our husband's permission to get a credit card like my mother had to go through?
All right, Debbie.
Everything else that went with this?
Thank you for making that point. And I'm going to come back to calls a little bit later. Hopefully we'll get that first caller back too. But right now, WBUR Senior State House reporter Steve Brown is at the State House where there was a big press conference with a ton of our elected leaders and representatives. And we are going to join him and get an update on that now. Steve, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks, Tiziana.
Take us to that sidewalk in front of the State House at 1:30 this afternoon, Steve.
Sure. The folks out there were mad, sad, and ready for a fight. Not a physical fight, but a fight to restore reproductive rights, including abortion. Now, that fight will have to take place on several fronts, shoring up abortion access here in Massachusetts, making sure that changes in Congress do not bring about more restrictions or even a nationwide ban, which could take place if control of Congress changes. And while mad and sad, they were not surprised. They all saw it coming. I attended a similar news conference back in May when the draft opinion was leaked and the same warnings were issued.
So I know that I saw a tweet earlier this afternoon from Senator Elizabeth Warren that she was headed over there. What did she have to say?
Yeah, she said that while Roe is dead, she vowed to make Roe alive again. She said the Supreme Court thinks it can force all of America to bend to their will. She pointed out that the wealthy in this country will always be able to obtain a safe abortion, but added that the brunt of the ruling will be felt by the poor. She cited 14-year-old girls who are molested by coaches or their stepfathers are the types of people who will be most affected by this ruling. She also warned that this ruling isn't the end and that the justices indicated that other rights, contraception, same-sex marriage may be repealed next. She called on President Biden to use every tool available to keep abortion legal. She also called on voters to ask candidates this fall for every office where they stand on Roe.
So I know Governor Baker, obviously Republican, was there. Attorney General and gubernatorial candidate Maura Healey was there. She's a Democrat. And I should note Jeff Deal and his running mate, who's a Republican candidate for governor, came out in support of the finding today. What did you hear from Governor Baker and Attorney General Healey?
Well, Governor Baker was not there, but he did ask his Secretary of Human Services, Mary Lou Sutters, to be there on his behalf. She reiterated the steps that the administration is taking to keep abortion services available in Massachusetts. As for Attorney General Maura Healey, she delivered an impassioned speech. She was pounding on the podium. She called this a really bad day, adding she never thought she would ever see a constitutional right taken away. She said the ruling is an effort to keep women down and further marginalized, noting that the court is politicized and that little law is going on at the high court. She did praise Governor Baker for issuing an executive order today directing state agencies not to cooperate with out-of-state investigations into Massachusetts abortion providers who provide services to residents from out of state.
Any other speakers of note there today, Steve?
Sure. Mayor Michelle Wu was there today. She said that nobody wins when rights are trampled. She said the SCOTUS justices listen to a fringe minority and have no idea what this decision will mean. She said the court has shown us who they are and who they care for, adding, quote, "It is not us," end quote.
So, Steve, we've known for basically a year that at some point the court was going to come out with a decision. And we've known for several weeks now after the leak what it was likely to be. Was this a fully planned gathering on the steps of the State House, or did it have that feel that there were people finding their way there in a moment of crisis or community?
I think the news conference this afternoon was planned. They were going to have this whether the decision came out last week, next week, whatever. I think this was everybody had their press releases ready to go because there's no surprise here. After the leaked opinion back in May, everybody knew how this was going. And, you know, maybe there'd be some changes, but for the most part, they knew where this was. Now, there are a number of demonstrations planned around Boston later this afternoon. You know, those were probably planned as well in advance, but, you know, those will be a little more organic as people are learning more about the ruling today. And, you know, many people are very upset by what the High Court did.
All right. WBUR Senior State House reporter Steve Brown covering things from the State House this afternoon. Appreciate it, Steve.
Thanks, Diziana.
So now we want to get some legal analysis. This was a legal opinion. This is the Supreme Court of the United States, and those findings will affect us and our laws here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. So joining us, Renee Landers. She is a professor of law at Suffolk University, and Ryan Williams, associate law professor at Boston College School of Law. Renee, welcome.
Thank you so much, Tiziana. Thanks for having me today.
And Ryan, welcome to you, too.
Thank you for having me.
So, Renee, we had seen a prior draft. I mentioned that with Steve Brown just a minute ago. Anything in the actual decision today that surprised you or you took note of that was different than what we had seen before?
Well, there isn't so much markedly different. I've seen a kind of red line draft comparing today's decision with the draft, the leaked draft. I think, there are a few, cleanup, typographical formatting error, changes and things like that. I think Justice Alito took out some of the pejorative asides that had been present in the earlier draft. But I think what was interesting is, seeing the concurrence from Chief Justice Roberts, in which he only concurred in the judgment, in which was upholding the Mississippi law, but he would not have voted to overrule Roe and Casey wholesale. And then, of course, we saw the dissent by Justice Breyer that Justices Kagan and Sotomayor joined. That was a very, explained why overruling Roe and Casey was such a treacherous path to go down.
So, Ryan, from a sort of a layperson's perspective, does it matter that Chief Justice Roberts said that thing about, well, I sort of agree with it, I wouldn't have gone as far as this? Does that set any legal precedent, or is that him sending signals out to the American people with the legitimacy of the court in mind?
Yeah, it doesn't matter on my read to the effect of this particular case, because there are 5 votes in support of the majority decision. Now, if there had been fewer than 5 in that decision, then a separate opinion would be relevant to the precedential effect. Because there is a 5-vote majority, that is going to be the controlling rule going forward. This is more Roberts explaining how he would have preferred to see the case come out.
All right, I do want to pick up a phone call here, 800-423-8255, for you to join this conversation. Josh is on the line from Forest Hills, New York. Hi there, Josh. What's on your mind?
Hi there. I think one of the biggest takeaways for me comes directly from Justice Thomas's concurring opinion, and what that reveals to me is that this is not just about saving lives. What this is really is about taking away rights, because he very clearly states that he's now after other things that has nothing to do with protecting an unborn child.
Thank you for that, Josh. And much is being made this afternoon of several lines in his concurring opinion. I'll quote just a little bit of it. Quote, in future cases, we should reconsider all of this court's substantive due process precedents, including Griswold, Lawrence, and Obergefell, end quote. He went on to say, quote, because any substantive due process decision is demonstrably erroneous, end quote. So, Renee, I do want to dig into the opinions now. In everyday terms, what is Clarence Thomas? Now, he didn't author the formal opinion, and again, I'm using lay terms. I am not a Supreme Court scholar. But what's he saying there, and what does it mean about what the court found today?
So, Justice Thomas has been beating this drum of his dissatisfaction with the court's substantive due process doctrine for a very long period of time.
And what does that mean? What is substantive due process?
Yes, substantive due process. So the court has been holding since at least the beginning of the 20th century that there are certain fundamental unenumerated, that is not specified in the Constitution, rights that are protected by the due process clause of the 14th Amendment and the Fifth Amendment with regard to federal government actions that protect these fundamental rights, and things like the right to the right to educate one's children as one sees fit, you know, send them to private school, allow them to be instructed in a foreign language, and then subsequently moving forward, the right to contraception has been based on this substantive due process theory, as well as the right to abortion, and then you know, the right to marry people for marriage among people of different races, and for same-sex marriage is also rooted in substantive due process.
So, Renee, are you concerned that it's a concurring opinion? Is Clarence Thomas effectively signaling, and is it a credible signal to you, that those cases will now, that he is he calling for challenges? Folks, time to challenge these things because they are questionable or illegitimate, and now is the time. Is that what we're hearing here?
Well, I do think that that is what we're hearing, because, you know, if you think about the decision the other day on the New York gun law, you know, that he has been calling, going around the country, speaking about how the Second Amendment right has been, you know, relegated to a second class status in the Constitution. So he was inviting.
This is Thomas was inviting.
Yeah, this is Thomas inviting this opportunity. And Alito actually was on that bandwagon, too, you know, inviting cases that would give them opportunity to change it. Now, to be clear, so far, Justice Thomas has not attracted other votes to his view that we should be deciding some of these cases under different theories of the Constitution. However, I think the Dobbs case today changed everything. And if you want, you know, further evidence of it, you know, in footnote 48 of the court's opinion, the main court opinion, they list, you know, cases favorably, cases that overturned prior law. One of them was the Miranda case, you know, your Miranda warnings if you are questioned by the police. This very week, the court decided a case which weakened the right to those warnings. So I think maybe instead of being a list of approved precedents that overturned prior precedents, it might be a shopping list for the court to overturn some of these rights that we've relied upon.
So, Ryan, I will turn to you. And I do want to point out for our listeners, we tried to bring two scholars on, you and Renee Landers, Ryan, who will see this somewhat differently. So let me turn to you now and ask you, do you see a rallying cry from Justice Thomas there? Do you anticipate that there will be other challenges? And do you agree with the findings of the court today?
So I think the I'll start with the first question first about what the future implications. The decision today, I think Justice Thomas's separate opinion is very consistent with a view he's been espousing for over a decade by this point, criticizing this entire line of jurisprudence. To this point, he has not had anyone join that bandwagon on the current court. And in fact, you see in both the majority opinion and in the opinion of Justice Kavanaugh, who wrote a short separate opinion, both took pains to kind of distance themselves from the idea that any of the other major substantive due process decisions would be affected in any way.
So they were saying, nuh-uh, not us.
Excuse me?
They were kind of saying, nuh-uh, not us. He's saying
yeah,
that
Yeah, essentially,
not.
They're saying, essentially, most significantly, they're communicating to the lower courts, don't take anything from this decision and use it as a wedge to start reopening those other precedents we have in this entire line. And just a note in that same footnote Professor Landers just noted, where the listing of favorable precedents that have been overruled, the very first decision cited there is the Obergefell versus Hodges case, which relied on substantive due process as a basis for upholding the right of same-sex couples to marry. So there are signals in the various opinions that suggest, cast some doubt on the idea that maybe the court is eager to reach out and reverse some of these particular rights. Now, that is not to say that there might not be other rights or other areas of constitutional law where the court may be willing to go back and overlook and review things.
So, Ryan, I know I asked you a three-part question, and you had only gotten to one part of it, but I want to pick up on a thread there and turn to the two of you together. So forgive me for that, because I'm backing off the other two parts of my question. I think one of the things that is hanging out there, and I want to hear from the two of you because you have different views. I think one of the things that is hanging out there is whether today, in addition to destabilizing and changing Roe v. Wade, whether you're happy about that outcome or not happy about that outcome, does it call into question the court itself, because this is such a significant reversal, in a way that destabilizes us as an American people? And I want to hear your take on that. And Ryan, I cut you off before, so I'll let you go first, and then Renee, I'll come to you.
Thank you. No worries. It's always hard to say in terms of a prediction, in terms of the future consequences, particularly in the political realm and the kind of sociological view of the court. It's an area that I don't claim any particular expertise specialized knowledge. I will say that the court has made significant changes in its doctrine over time, and the abortion decisions themselves have always been particularly controversial in the modern era, at least, including in 1992 when the court upheld Roe versus Wade against a constitutional challenge in Planned Parenthood versus Casey. I think it will depend in part not only on what happens in this case or the other cases decided this term, but going forward, what the court does and how in line with general public opinion the court's decisions reflect. And I think at some point it's perfectly plausible that it could step far enough outside the line that we see a political reaction provoked that might cast questions around the court's overall legitimacy.
And how about you, Renee?
Well, I do point out that in the last several years, when we've had, sort of more radical retrenchments in existing law, and this being the recent example of it by the court, that the court's credibility and approval ratings in public opinion polls have been plummeting. And, you have to take that kind of with a grain of salt, because, many institutional approval ratings have been falling over the same period of time. But I think it's notable because the court enjoyed a fair amount of respect heretofore. I would be the last one to say that the court should be adhere totally to majoritarian sentiments. Because at the time the Loving v. Virginia case was decided, which is the one that said that states could not prohibit interracial marriage, the polling at the time was 70% against that decision. And, I think you would find that the public opinion polls are, have flipped on that issue in this time. So sometimes, the court is correct that there's a right thing to do under the Constitution that may not align perfectly with public opinion. However, I think that what is missing in this case is that, first of all, Alito seems to think that he's calming the situation down by sending this issue back to the states to do whatever they want with respect to the right to abortion. I doubt that that is going to be the case. And I think that the decision opens up a whole raft of other legal issues that is going to necessarily involve the engagement of the courts. What if states ban the importation of medication abortion drugs? That raises all kinds of legal issues in the conflict between federal and state power. Courts will have to decide that issue. What if states purport to ban women to travel from their state to another state to have
an
abortion?
And excuse me for interrupting on that, but that could affect us here in the Commonwealth, right? Because here in the Commonwealth, we not only are going to continue to provide abortions, but the governor's executive order from earlier today specifically says we will protect people from states trying to reach across state lines and prosecute our providers.
Our healthcare providers and we will not cooperate in any law enforcement actions against women from other states, people from other states who come here to take advantage of lawful healthcare services here. So I think that it has opened up a can of worms of other issues. And what the public discussion, and then I will stop. The public discussion has failed to appreciate is that Roe v. Wade was the compromise. That was the political compromise, recognizing that people who think that the fetus is a human life and should be protected at all costs, and people who think that women have should have an unrestricted right to abortion, there is no way to make both sides on that argument happy. And Roe was the somewhat uncomfortable compromise, but it did seem to work for many years, 50 years. And I think we've upset that balance, and I think it's going to take quite a bit of time for the courts as well as society to sort out the ramifications of it.
Okay, thank you for that. Ryan, in a sentence, what do you think happens specifically next?
Well, I agree that the issue of abortion is not going to leave the Supreme Court. I believe that the issues of interstate and state federal relations will continue to be addressed by the court, and we're going to see new jurisprudence around these related issues, even if the core issue regarding the regulation decision has been returned to the states.
So a bunch of legal issues coming.
Yes.
All right. Ryan Williams is associate law professor at Boston College School of Law. Renee Landers is a professor at Suffolk University in the law school. Thanks to both of you. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Renee.